Have you seen Chuck Norris lately? He's still kicking butt and staying active well into his 80s. What's even more shocking is he looks more jacked than ever and seems to have more energy than guys half his age. And it's all thanks to Morning Kick, a revolutionary new daily drink from Roundhouse Provisions that combines ultra-potent greens like spirulina and kale with probiotics, prebiotics, collagen, and even ashwagandha. Just mix with water, stir, and enjoy. Unlike other green drinks out there, this one tastes exactly like strawberry lemonade and has hundreds of five-star reviews. Go to roundhouseprovisions.com/save44 for up to 44% off your regular priced order. Plus, every purchase is backed by a 90-day money-back guarantee. So if you want to experience smoother digestion, a boost of energy, and just an overall healthier body, then go to roundhouseprovisions.com/save44 today. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease. Results can vary.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
This is The Crossover, an NBA show hosted by Sports Illustrated's Chris Mannix and Howard Beck.
It's a whole new level for you and me, Chris, this relationship.
Like and subscribe for the best weekly NBA content these two are capable of.
What does that mean?
Could be the best duo ever.
I don't see how you can beat that.
Here they are, Chris Mannix and Howard Beck.
Crossover NBA podcast, Chris Mannix and Howard Beck. What's happening, Beck? Good morning on a Tuesday morning here in the NBA season.
Good morning. It's an awfully early morning for you, so thank you for getting up at the crack of dawn in whichever time zone you happen to be in. That's several hours behind mine.
Well, you know, I'm here for you, Howard. That's
It's the dedication. It's the dedication to the podcast, to the craft. The craft is always what's been important to you, I know.
It is, and I'm on the West Coast. The Brooklyn Nets, your Brooklyn Nets, are on the West Coast as well. So why don't we start? Well, I will say hi to them for you. Why don't we start then with the Nets, who are now 4-2 since the suspension of Kyrie Irving, which will continue into a seventh game of the Nets play in Sacramento on Tuesday. Brooklyn, Howard, has had a top five defense during this stretch, while Kevin Durant has gone back to looking like Kevin Durant. Among the wins was a solid road win against the Clippers. They're going to close up this road trip against Sacramento tonight, as I said. Let's start here. This 4-2 stretch that they're on, do you look at the way they're playing as being in any way sustainable?
Well, listen, what we know is sustainable in general is that if you build an offense around Kevin Durant and a lot of Kevin Durant, Kevin Durant is still an elite player when healthy. That's been an issue at times the last couple of years, ever since the Achilles. So in a short span of six games, riding a lot of Kevin Durant and then having that open things up for everybody around him. And oh, by the way, along the way, Joe Harris and Seth Curry have been back in the mix. You know, not every game, but you got two of the elite shooters in the league back, and you've got one of the great individual offensive engines of this era. Yeah, like, that is sustainable for stretches. At this stage of Kevin Durant's career, like, if, you know, we'll get to Kyrie, but if Kyrie never played another game for the Nets and you were saying, well, we'll just do this the rest of the season, is that sustainable? No. I'm going to say no, because Kevin Durant has played about two-thirds of his games over the last couple of years, ever since coming back from the Achilles, and that's what you should expect from a mid-30s post-Achilles surgery player, even at his level. He's not going to be able to do it every night. So you're going to burn him out eventually. And the scrambling, hustling style of defense that they're playing, you know, a lot of people are making a lot out of how much the defense has improved without Kyrie. Not coincidental, not entirely on Kyrie, but also not coincidental. And again, like, you can do that for a while. I don't know how long you can do that. Also, not for nothing. And I know some of these teams actually do have winning records, but like, in that 4-6 stretch or 4-2 stretch over six games without Kyrie, they beat the Wizards, who I think they've got a winning record, but you know, whatever. They're the Wizards. Like, they're not that great. They beat Charlotte.
Hey, the white hot Washington Wizards right now. What are you talking about? Four in a row.
They beat
minus
the Wizards.
Bradley Beal.
They beat the Hornets. They beat the Knicks. They beat a Clippers team that's all messed up and still doesn't have Kawhi. Like, I don't want to get carried away with this. StatMuse is having a field day with daily updates on, you know, with Kyrie, without Kyrie. And now, you know, people are pushing back and saying, oh, well, it's Jacques Vaughn taking over for Steve Nash. Like, all right, like with everything else, I just want to say this real quick. Like with everything else, it's a lot of things. It's not just that Kyrie's not there. But Kyrie is a defensive liability. Kyrie does dominate the ball, and they do, and Kyrie has also been a distraction, and you know, was not all playing all that well. So it's partially about Kyrie. Look, you don't go from literally 30th in the NBA in defensive efficiency, 30th to first in defensive efficiency with a net difference of about like 20 points per 100 possessions. That's not because Jacques Vaughn has come up with the world's greatest defensive schemes suddenly. And by the way, this happens all the time with coaching changes too. Like whatever you think of Steve Nash, you fire a coach, the next guy comes in, a team usually has a little honeymoon period. They surge, everybody gets focused. It brings focus when a coach gets fired. It's a lot of things. Maybe it's even a little bit of Jacques Vaughn, but like defense is mostly about personnel and not about coaches, by the way. We'll get to that more when we start talking about the Knicks in a little bit. So it's not Jacques Vaughn did not transform this team overnight. Kyrie Irving's absence is a major difference, but also Joe Harris and Seth Curry playing is a major difference. I don't want to say the opponents are a major difference because they were losing to crap teams before. Now they're beating at least some bad teams.
Yeah, it's not sustainable. I'm just going to go out there and say it just bluntly. It's not sustainable. You made the point about the opponents. Clippers, I thought, was a pretty solid win on the road, but some of the other wins, you know, you play who's in front of you on the schedule. That's, you don't get to pick and choose, but I think that has something to do with it. It feels like they've caught a little bit of lightning in a bottle here. They got what often happens is a bounce after a coaching change. And sometimes front offices will make a coaching change when they see a soft part in the schedule coming up because they want to gain some momentum off that coaching change. I think they got a little bit of that. I think the temporary removal of Kyrie Irving gave them a little bit of a bounce as well. You mentioned Seth Curry, Joe Harris. Joe Harris not shooting the ball as well as we're accustomed, but Seth Curry shooting better than 40% from three right now in the brief time he's played. Kevin Durant loves playing with Seth Curry, so guess he loves playing with a Curry. You know, has success playing with a Curry. So
he should have stayed with the last one.
Yeah, probably. But the I think that's what is mostly happening here with Brooklyn. The question becomes, when, and I guess, will Kyrie Irving be back into this mix? Joe Tsai, the owner of the Brooklyn Nets, he told the New York Post this week that Kyrie still has some work to do before he can return. The Nets, or the Kings game, will be game 7, Howard, of this suspension. Do you see an end in sight here? What do we think about expectations for when or if Kyrie Irving will be back?
It's really hard to know. It's really hard to know. I mean, I think the only people who know that for sure are, you know, Joe Tsai, Sean Marks, and Kyrie Irving, and maybe Kyrie's circle of advisors. You know, Kyrie, we haven't heard from him in a while, other than another one of his, you know, happy talk tweets on Sunday, where he tweeted, and this was on day, what was it? I think that was the day he could have come back. That was after five games had gone by. So on the day that he theoretically could have come back from the initial suspension, which remember was five games minimum, and then we'll see if you've fulfilled these things we're asking you to do. So on Sunday, he says on Twitter, "I was not put here on earth to participate in any religious/political wars or incite racial disharmony/prejudice within communities. We are all equal under the sun, and I am here to participate in the building of an equal world and follow the world from the Most High." So I don't know what that meant or what the intention of that was, other than to once again proclaim I'm a great guy and I love everybody and, you know, we are the world again. That's not what the Nets are waiting for. They're not waiting for a happy talk tweet from Kyrie Irving. They're waiting for, you know, some combination of sincere contrition and an acknowledgement of what was contained in that film and a disavowal of what was contained in that film. And if they have not reinstated him, I would say probably they have not gotten all that from him yet. Now, I know there's been pushback and people saying that they're making him jump through all these hoops and it's unfair. And it's, I think people are underestimating just how serious posting that thing was. All that said, listen,
I don't, Howard, let me just jump in on that note there.
Yeah.
I don't underestimate how serious it was. And you had a terrific Friday episode with Dan Grunfeld where you addressed a lot of these points. I encourage people to go and listen to that. I do think we are entering the extreme range of this because Kyrie is no longer being defiant. That's not me, you know, kind of putting that out there. That's Joe Tsai remarking publicly on his talks with Kyrie Irving. That's the head of the Anti-Defamation League putting out a positive tweet recently about Kyrie Irving. Kyrie's own words on social media. He is transitioned from being defiant to contrite. And at some point, as we get into game 7, 8, 9, potentially, of this suspension, we have to start wondering when it becomes punitive. That's not to say that, that's not to discount what Kyrie said and the impact it had. He deserved to be punished, and I think he's being punished. And I think at some point you do have to ask when is enough enough. And we are kind of getting to that point, at least with the players' union. You see Jaylen Brown, who has been probably the voice of the players at this point. And I should say this. Not a lot of love lost over the years between Jaylen Brown and Kyrie Irving. Like, you know, when things went sour in Boston from a basketball perspective, that those two were not on the same page. Jaylen Brown said after the Celtics game on Monday, when he was asked about the Nets' process with Kyrie Irving and how fair it was, he said, quote, "I think you are asking for a need to satisfy the common public, and I'm not sure if that is something that Kyrie is looking to do. I don't think he meant any harm by posting what he did, but the comment that Joe Tsai made, which you just referenced, which I feel like bothered a lot of our people, was like, he has more work to do. Like, what does that mean? Our society has work to do, including Joe Tsai. So I'm curious to know what that is and what that means, and everybody is tuned in." So I think Jaylen Brown represents the voice of the union right now and kind of their position on all this. JB is a vice president within the players' union. So I think that he is speaking for kind of the way that the tide is changing at this point. We've seen Kyrie Irving get punished. At some point, Howard, there needs to be an end to this punishment, right? Like, at some point, he has to be allowed, if he's contrite, which it seems like he's being, at some point he's going to have to be allowed back into the game, whether it's, you know, with the Nets or if they decide, look, we're better off without him.
So a couple of things I want to just throw out at the start of this before I jump into where we are within the suspension. I never advocated for suspension personally. I don't advocate for suspension being continued now. I'm not in the business of advocating for disciplinary measures for NBA players, coaches, anybody else. If he's back tomorrow, if he were back 2 days ago, it's fine. Like, I have obviously some strong feelings about what he did, what happened. I've written about it. I've podcasted about it. Whatever the Nets decide, whenever he's back, it's fine, as far as I'm concerned. So this is not about what I think is appropriate discipline myself. It's not up to me. It's about to the NBA. Adam Silver said last week at a Sports Business Journal convention or panel discussion, Adam Silver said he met with Kyrie. He doesn't believe Kyrie's anti-Semitic. If that's coming from the commissioner, who of course also is Jewish. Again, fine. If Kyrie's back tomorrow, fine. But here's what I'll say about, in response to what Jaylen Brown has said, in response to what some others have said about this. The Nets put down these requirements, which were reported out by The Athletic and others. And it's six requirements. And people have described this as some onerous thing. This, like, all this series of hoops he's got to jump through. And how unfair is this? Why are you putting him through all this stuff? Remember that what he posted, the film he posted, was at its core anti-Semitic propaganda. It was hateful. It was damaging. It's the kind of stuff that is fueling anti-Semitic actions across the country. Not the film specifically, right? I'm not saying Kyrie posted that and then things happened. Things are happening, though. There have been plenty of reports out there. I covered this on last week's podcast. So you don't just say you're sorry and move on. They're like that. They want him to acknowledge the gravity of it. Makes sense, I think. When he finally took to Instagram after he was suspended, I don't know how sincere you could take that apology. And of course, it's an Instagram post. Is that the same thing as actually holding yourself accountable, sitting down in front of whether it's the Nets or sitting in front of the media and describing, he's never actually explained why he posted it, which parts he agrees and disagrees with, because he still kind of makes it sound like, well, it's a mix of stuff and I don't agree with all of it. That's problematic if you've seen and heard the things that were in this film. So real quick, the six things they asked him to do: issue an apology. He kind of did in the Instagram thing. I would say it's eye of the beholder as to how sincere or heartfelt or substantive that was. But issue an apology and condemn the harmful and false content. He has not condemned the harmful and false content. He has said he doesn't agree with everything. He didn't condemn. I don't think that that's an unreasonable thing to ask of him. Complete the anti-hate. The verbiage on here is messed up on what I'm reading, but it was complete some anti-hate actions that he had agreed to with the Nets and the Anti-Defamation League and all that stuff. Complete sensitivity training, whatever. Like every time somebody, every infraction of the last 30 years that involves, these kinds of issues, you do sensitivity training. That's, again, like it's probably one of those like 15-minute modules that you do online, like you and I have to do, Chris. Like HR sometimes says, all right, it's your annual, like, click through these things. Not onerous, not that big of a deal. Everybody in every workplace does something like that. Complete anti-Semitic, anti-hate training designed by the Nets. Again, these are probably just online courses. Meet with representatives from the Anti-Defamation League and Jewish leaders in Brooklyn. And then after all that, meet with Josiah and franchise officials to talk about lessons learned and gravity of harm. Which part of this is so unreasonable? Like, they're not asking him to, run cross country, coast to coast, raising funds for, like, I don't know. Like, there's nothing unreasonable or onerous in this. These are the kinds of things that you normally do when somebody has engaged in some kind of hateful speech. Now, again, I know he didn't say anything. He tweeted the thing. Some people think that that's no big deal, and then he deleted it 3 days later. The two times that he addressed it publicly, he was defiant and didn't acknowledge anything about the harm of it and didn't disavow any of it. So those are still kind of outstanding issues that I think need to be addressed. So again, if they say that they're done and it's fine, he's done and he's back tomorrow, fine. If it was yesterday, fine. I don't care. But let's not pretend that these were unreasonable requirements. And if he's not back, it means he hasn't completed them, Chris. And I think at that point you start to wonder, well, why is he not completing them? Is he dragging his feet? Does he not want to disavow? Does he not want to apologize? He's once again, Kyrie is leaving things open to interpretation by not addressing all this and by not having completed these things. And I don't know what to make of that.
Yeah, so I misspoke of this road trip ending in Sacramento. It ends on Thursday in Portland. And after that, the Nets are home on Sunday against Memphis. That's kind of the date, Howard, that I'm circling, where if he's not back on Sunday against the Grizzlies, after that, the Nets go on a 3-game road trip, then I'll start to wonder exactly what's going on behind the scenes. Is Kyrie balking, as you said, about maybe doing some of the things he's being asked to do? Or the Nets kind of being a little too punitive here on all this? I think there's room for both arguments, all right, but at this point.
Were any of those requirements they laid out unreasonable? And if they haven't reinstated him, doesn't it suggest that he hasn't completed them? Like, I mean, now, listen, if there's some other thing that's going on here where it's just like, no, we really just don't want him back and we're just using this as a pretense. Look, I'll accept any possible speculation, too. But on its face, it's
here are
the requirements,
I wonder
and he hasn't done it.
Yeah. Okay. No, look, all we've heard, at least publicly, is the positive things that Kyrie's doing. Not from Team Kyrie, but from Josiah, from Adam Silver, from Sean Marks. Like, he's at least doing some of the things he's being asked to do. If he's not doing all the things, that's a separate conversation. But I'll be interested to see the next couple of days when the Nets go home exactly how this Kyrie Irving stuff plays out. All right, let's talk about the Celtics, who are rolling right now. 7 straight wins after beating Oklahoma City on Monday. They sit alone atop the Eastern Conference. They have the NBA's best offense, Howard, by a lot at this point. Jason Tatum's averaging better than 30 points per game. Jaylen Brown is playing like an all-star. Marcus Smart, as I always said about Marcus Smart, continues to grow into this lead playmaker role in the Celtics. They still don't have Robert Williams back, who will shore up what has been a surprisingly leaky defense when he returns sometime in the next couple of months. Howard, what do you make of the way the Celtics are playing right now?
Well, no, and you left out one piece here, too. Like, Malcolm Brogdon, their great offseason pickup, has missed a bunch of games due to injury, and yet they're still rolling, too. So,
and he has not played all that well, either. Brogdon has had – he's had some moments, but there have been some lineups there where he's been a little bit shaky.
So they've been absolutely dominant, absolutely fantastic, despite – you know, those are two key rotation players, right? Like, if they're going to make a championship run in the spring, it's going to be probably with Brogdon and Robert Williams III in there. Those are two really important players. That's, you know, a starter and your sixth man, probably. That they have been this great. A lot of different things here. One is that when you've got young stars like Jaylen Brown and Jason Tatum, you just want to keep seeing, you know, whether it's incremental or leaps. At this stage of their career, it's going to be probably a little more incremental because they're both established stars at this stage. But they are both still showing evolution in their games. And Tatum in particular, look, I think he was your preseason MVP pick, right? Like, he is absolutely on track to be in that mix, that conversation from now all the way through the time that we were getting our ballots in April. Like, there's no question he is firmly in that echelon of the NBA now and probably there for a good long time to come. And Jaylen Brown is going to make it very hard to leave him off of the All-Star team. And Marcus Smart, again, look, you know, you called it. I mean, I as you know, have been skeptical and thought Malcolm Brogdon coming in was a good thing in part because I thought they needed a more sure-handed ball handler and playmaker type. Marcus Smart just keeps continuing to evolve in the role. And then there's this. Like, this team is pretty much the same, right? The Warriors win the championship, and they let a bunch of veterans go because they're that confident in their youth, and now the Warriors are struggling. They're struggling with a couple of different things, but they changed a little bit of who they were in terms of the back end of their rotation. The Celtics are largely the group that was in the finals, lost the finals, is motivated by that, as you wrote in your great cover story for our preview issue. The Celtics have all that cohesion and continuity from last season, and they're just picking up where they left off. They're a really strong young team on the rise, and they were ready on day one to come out and keep just smacking teams around and show, like, we are on a mission. You know, that's what I'm seeing.
Yeah, I say the Marcus Smart stuff a little bit tongue-in-cheek because, you know, the start of last year, I was, you know, pillorying the Celtics for not, you know, going out and getting Lonzo Ball to play point guard. 2 months later, Marcus Smart is established and took him to the finals. And look, I was on board this offseason saying Marcus Smart should not be replaced as the point guard, and he's proving people wrong and me right in that particular situation. Look, the Celtics, they play a lot like they did last season. They are a little more aggressive when it comes to three-point shooting. I think Joe Mazzulla's line was, "I like math," when he was asked about the number of threes the Celtics are taking, and three's better than two, so the Celtics are playing well in that respect. Look, a lot of this early start, some of the improvements we've seen, is again the case of Brad Stevens and the Celtics front office knowing what it's talking about. I mean, at the very end of last year's finals, right after game six, when I was writing a column about what the Celtics are going to do next, I had someone from the organization call me that night, and we were talking about improvements that the Celtics were going to look to make, and they said to me, "I'm telling you, Sam Hauser is going to be our free agent pickup this summer." This is before the Brogdon picked up. But this person told me then, that Sam Hauser was going to be the guy. And here we are, Howard, in mid-November, and Sam Hauser shooting about 45% from three-point range. Like, he has been bombing from three-point range. He's still not the level of defender they need for him to be as big a factor as he could be in the playoffs, but he has been a variable. I was one of the people on this podcast and elsewhere that was jumping up and down and saying, go sign Dwight Howard. Go sign DeMarcus Cousins. Get another big in there while Robert Williams is out. Well, Luke Kornet has been pretty good for this team so far. I mean, aside from those weird, you've seen those videos where he's contesting three-point shots in the paint. I don't really know what the point of that is, but I guess if you're taking the I've never seen that before. I guess if you're taking,
Didn't he explain, like, somebody had told him, like, there's some science to this. It's like it's a visual.
I'm sure
thing.
There is. I'm sure there is a science to it. But Luke Kornet has been pretty good. He's been pretty good the last few weeks. If I'm concerned about anything at this point, Howard, is that the Celtics starters are being stretched out a lot of minutes right now. If you look at some of the minutes the Celtics are playing this year, you got Tatum at about 38 minutes per game, Jaylen Brown about 37. Al Horford, who's 36 years old, is averaging nearly 32 minutes per game. They're giving him some breaks in some of these games, as they should, but he's at 32 minutes, which is more than he played last season. I get a little bit worried in November when I see those minutes numbers. And I know you can say that Tatum is young, Brown is young. You give Horford enough days off, he'll be fine. But I'd like to see them stretch the bench out a little bit. Maybe they will once Robert Williams comes back and that adds another 30-plus minute per guy into their rotation. But that's really the only concern. Look, the offense is not going to be number one in the NBA all season, I don't think. But the defense is not going to be 24th, that I'm sure of, when Robert Williams comes back. They're going to get back to being a top 10 defensive team. And when they do, man, if they're like 3 offense and 5 defense, not a lot of teams going to be able to compete with that.
And look, Tatum and Brown are young. They can handle the heavy load. I mean, in this age, it's rare for guys to be averaging in the high 30s in minutes per game. And maybe once Brogdon is playing again and Robert Williams, there's just like a domino effect through the rotation. But the fact is, like, you know, Tatum and Brown are the offensive engine of this team. You know, Brogdon will give you the occasional 18 or 20 point game. Smart might give you the occasional 18 or 20 point game. Where else are you really looking for the scoring, though? And so, like, I do think it's just something. It would be too much to say it's a concern, but I would say that at this early stage of the season, that's something to keep an eye on, right? Like, are they going to be able to ratchet down Tatum and Brown's minutes as they get deeper into the schedule, as they get guys healthy? How well does the offense function if those guys are ratcheting down and you're having to up the usage of some of your other players who can't really create for themselves? They've got a nice mix, and they've got plenty of shooting, and they've got obviously a lot of guys who bust their asses on defense. And so the defense will always be sustainable. But yeah, I would, you know, keep an eye on the minutes and the usage by their two stars.
Shout out to Joe Mazzulla, by the way, for the job he's doing in Boston. While all the Ime Udoka stuff was going on with the Nets, Joe Mazzulla just kept winning with the Celtics. Like, that could have been a distraction because the Celtics were commenting on it. You had Jason Tatum, Jaylen Brown, Marcus Smart being asked about, you know, Ime Udoka getting back into the NBA. Joe Mazzulla kept his head and kept his team focused, and they kept winning. They've been going on this streak, 7 games, while the Udoka stuff was playing out very publicly in Brooklyn.
Remember where we were a month ago as we're heading into the season, and we're like, man, how are the Celtics going to deal with this cloud? You know, and Robert Williams III is out, and then they've got this Ime Udoka cloud, and a rookie coach who's 34 who's never coached beyond Division II. And the same thing, we were looking at the Suns and going, oh, like the Sarver stuff, and they're for sale now, and DeAndre Ayton and everything else. Suns are not, like, they're not dominant, but the Suns have been pretty good. The Celtics have been absolutely dominant. And who was the third team that was all the clouds over? Oh, yeah, that's right, the Nets. And they just brought in more clouds, although they're kind of winning right now. But I do, like, a lot of credit to the Celtics and Suns, two teams that certainly coming into the season you thought might just, you know, have too much chaos around them, and they've been great.
All right, speaking of chaos, let's talk about the Knicks. Knicks are 6-7. Right now, they gave up 145 points to Oklahoma City on Sunday. 145 points. I think that was possible outside of like NBA 2K.
The Knicks scored 48 points in the first quarter, which was a franchise record, and then lost the game.
Lost. This is a Tom Thibodeau coach team giving up 145 points. Since the end of last season, they are 43-52. They're playing largely lifeless over the last week or so, especially defensively. What do you make of what's going on in New York?
Well, quick reality check to start this conversation. The Knicks won 37 games last season. And then in the offseason, they added Jalen Brunson. If they got to about 500, having added Jalen Brunson to a 37-win team, I'd say that's about right. I'd say it's about where I had them. Jalen Brunson's not an all-star, probably never be an all-star, but he's a really good player, and there's a lot of needs that he filled. And but you add a you take a 37-win team that doesn't really have a lot of there's really no star power, and then you add a solid but not star player, it's about where they should be. They're a game under 500 as you and I speak right now. This is, like, to me, anybody who's freaking out about this, like, I get it. The expectations are always higher in this season, and Knicks fans, you know, are forever hoping that somehow this team is better than the sum of its parts. But this was a profoundly average to slightly below average team that added a good, solid player, but not a star. What else do you expect? This is who they are.
Not to get 145 points hung on you by Oklahoma City. That's
it was a Sunday noon start. Those games are always weird.
They're weird for the other team, though, especially coming into New York. Like, New York and Miami, the two places undefeated. Yeah. LA, I guess, too.
Well,
afternoon games. And you listen to some of the comments that Tom Thibodeau made after the game, and it doesn't sound like he has his finger on the pulse there about how to fix this and how to make this a little more cohesive. I get your point, right? Like, the Knicks didn't go out and sign two MVP-level players. They signed a very good point guard in Jalen Brunson, who they paid a lot of money for, who we knew coming in was a defensive liability. And this is kind of what you get. I expected maybe a little bit more consistent. Maybe I was fooled a little bit by the late October surge they had. They were 3-1. It was like, they got a point guard to put up a bunch of points. They got to win some games.
They didn't beat anybody.
I know.
I mean, they were. Yeah, that was the thing, right? They
almost
they beat
Memphis.
Like, the Hornets and the Pistons, and like they, it wasn't
almost
like
beat
they
Memphis.
Were, this was Bing Bong all over again. This was like overreact to a few early season wins. Like, come on,
I miss Bing Bong. Bring back Bing Bong.
it was fun. Yeah, I mean, listen, the alarming thing I think is that this is a Tom Thibodeau team that's ranked at the moment 24th. In defensive efficiency. They were 11th last season. They were 4th his first season. So it's been nothing but going in the wrong direction. But I would just say, like, they're missing Mitchell Robinson right now. That's at least a factor. But I think this just underscores once more, folks.
Playing Evan Fournier some minutes still. Not exactly sure what the strategy is there. But, you know, what do I know?
They're still caught in between. This has been the case the whole time. You and I have discussed this ad nauseum over the last couple of years. Yeah, they're playing Evan Fournier a lot. Now, they've got young guys like Grimes and Quickley and whatever, but they don't, like, we want to win, but we want to develop young guys, but we want to, what are we doing? They're caught in the middle. They've been caught in the middle from the moment that Tibbs was hired. And, you know, they never really committed to one direction. That's been the issue. Also, like, they don't really have a star. So there's no margin for error here, right? You can go through some little mini slumps in a season. You can, you know, have a guy sputter here or there. But if you've got a star, like, that's like the Nets, right? The Nets are a disaster on so many levels. You got Kevin freaking Durant. And some nights you could just say, you know what, just do everything you got to do. The Knicks have no margin for error because there's nobody that you just hand the ball to. And by the way, back to the defense thing. Like, I know Tom Thibodeau is a defensive-minded coach, and that's his rep. He had great defenses when he was the defensive coordinator for the Celtics, and he had great defenses for most of his years with the Bulls, but he did not have great defenses for most of his time in Minnesota, and he has not had great defense most of his time in New York. Why? Because there's no such thing as a defensive genius who just transforms your team into a defensive juggernaut. You need the right personnel, and this is time and again this has been shown, and like, I don't know what else they were expecting. If you don't have great defensive players, you're not going to have a great defense. There's only so much you can do with scheme and telling guys to hustle and having long practices.
Okay, I just to put a button on this, my last point is that Evan Fournier, in a game where the Knicks scored 135 points, he had zero in that 145-135 loss, and he still played 20 minutes in that game. I don't understand that part of the Knicks rotation right now. I don't get it. Like, what is Evan Fournier doing out there for that many minutes? If he's not shooting the three ball well, what's he doing out there?
It's a great
make
question
a lot of
for
Tom
right. Thibodeau.
Last thing I want to hit you with. Last week, you alluded to a player that the Lakers would like to acquire, a big fish that they were hunting. I'm kind of paraphrasing you there a little bit. It was later reported by Chris Haynes, a Bleacher Report now, the Lakers covet one Bradley Beal in Washington. Was that the player, Howard, that you were referencing?
I felt like a bunch of bells should go off when that happened. Like, ding, 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 ding. Like, yes. Yeah, I wasn't trying to be mysterious, and it was weird when the aggregators, like, went crazy over what I said last week. I was leaving out Bradley Beal's name in order to not have the aggregators go crazy, but aggregators gonna aggregate. So, yeah, it was Bradley Beal. And remember, our discussion was in the context of what can the Lakers do? What should the Lakers do? Westbrook plus the two picks. Is it time for the Pacers deal? Blah, blah, blah. And the thing that one specific exec had said to me was, they're waiting. They're not going to do the Pacers deal right now. They weren't ruling it out entirely, which also got misinterpreted. They weren't ruling out entirely. It wasn't saying that there was no possibility of a Kyrie trade. It was just like, for right now, they're not going to do these other things because they're waiting. And the player that was mentioned to me was Bradley Beal. So here was the quote from the Western Conference exec who I spoke to who had mentioned this. He says, Washington's the one that I keep thinking that's going to happen. If you're the Lakers, don't you think you can get Bradley Beal? He's got a no trade clause. He wants to come to California. That was an interesting tidbit of this. He essentially can pick where he wants to go because of the no trade clause. And the most the Lakers can really give is those two picks. But if Washington, if he asks out, basically he's saying that Washington has to do that. Because if he asks out and says California or bust, the Wizards, because of the no trade clause, the Wizards do have to potentially take a lesser deal, right? Like if you just put Bradley Beal on the block right now, open to the entire league, you'd get better than Westbrook plus the two picks. I think you'd get a better offer. Although Bradley Beal's contract is massive, and maybe not. Maybe that, you know, maybe someone's saying that, hey, we're doing you a favor taking this huge contract off your hands for a guy who can't carry your franchise. Is Westbrook in the two picks enough? Well, if Bradley Beal says, I only want to go to California or I only want to go to the Lakers because I have a no trade clause and I can steer this thing. So that's the logic that this Western Conference exec was laying out to me. And so he's saying, he said this, whatever you want to say about Pelinka, he's being smart. He's taking his time. That was the Western Conference executive wrapping up that thought.
So. Oh, okay. Okay. I've got a thought here. Let me just chime in on this one. All right. If you can get Bradley Beal, 100%, long-term contract, guy that's, late 20s, early 30s at this point, one of the best scorers in the NBA. Yeah, like you go out there and you get them. That's the deal that you make. The idea that you can get Bradley Beal for Westbrook and two first, to me that's kind of like I want a pony, but you're never going to get the pony because that's not – doesn't make any sense right now for Washington.
The pony just said I only want to be owned by Chris Mannix.
I know. The third part of this is why the hell would Bradley Beal right now want to go to Los Angeles? Like, why would he want to be a Laker? The Lakers right now, as we record this, are 3-10. They are closer to the Houston Rockets at 2-12 than they are the Oklahoma City Thunder at 6-8 in the Western Conference. The Wizards, my Washington Wizards, are 8-6 at the moment. They've won four in a row, albeit they've been doing it without Bradley Beal in the lineup. I'm not saying the Wizards are a championship contender, but they might be closer to one than the Lakers are. And if you're Bradley Beal, are you not looking at LA being like, all right, LeBron's 38 next month. Anthony Davis had a bad back after like the first game of the season. There's no talent on the roster. And if they acquire me, they're not going to have a first round pick they can move until the next decade. Like, what are we doing? Why would Bradley Beal all of a sudden wake up tomorrow and be like, you know what? I'm glad I got my contract with the Wizards. I'd like a trade. And I'd like a trade to the Los Angeles Lakers, where when LeBron leaves in a year, I'm going to wind up in Wizards Westland with Rob Pelinka, Jeannie Buss, and the whole Buss family trying to build a team around me. That makes zero sense. That the Washington Wizards would have to crater. They would have to crater for Bradley Beal to even want that scenario. And by the way, one other thing, if he did say, I want to trade, there's probably three or four more teams that he probably said Golden State, send me out there, which actually makes a little bit more sense for both teams right now, given the situations that they might be in a month or so from now. So, I want to win Powerball. That's to me the equivalent of the Lakers holding out and coveting Bradley Beal. I covet a win in Powerball. That's what I covet.
I'm sending you a pony and a Powerball ticket as soon as we get off the line here.
Good. Do it.
Listen, fair points, but if if Bradley Beal cared about being in a winning organization so much, why is he stuck in Washington for all these years?
No, but there's a financial reason for that. 5 years, $200 million, that's $250 million guaranteed.
If he were, if he really were like, I can't take the losing anymore, I can't take me with an organization that has no direction, he could have left Washington 17 times by now. So, all right, granted, fair point. The Lakers are further from title contention than the Wizards at the moment. It's all relative. But if your choice is between playing with LeBron and Anthony Davis, for all the warts on that roster, it's still LeBron and Anthony Davis versus, you know, Porzingis and Hachimura. I mean, I don't know. Like, I think Bradley Beal joining that team does a lot for the Lakers, right? I and again, I don't know if the Wizards would do that, but given the no trade clause, there might be that possibility. I like your, you know, you make the right point, right? If the idea is California as opposed to specifically the Lakers or specifically LA, the Warriors could come with the package that some of us thought they should have done a couple years ago, which is, you know, at the time it was their picks, but it's the young guys now. Can you do a Weissman, Kuminga, Moody plus picks or whatever combination thereof? Maybe it's not all of them to get Bradley Beal. Is that a more attractive package? But again, if Beal says Lakers are bust and he has no trade clause, well, then the Wizards either don't trade him at all, or they trade him to the Lakers for Westbrook and the two picks. And by the way, those two picks are going to be phenomenal probably because it's 2027 and 2029 and you're going to get them. You're going to demand that they be unprotected. You know, there are worse outcomes for the Wizards than that. By the way, I make jokes about Porzingis. Porzingis is playing really well
yes.
right now for them. He's part of
yes.
their success.
He is. Only Lakers fans can wake up this morning thinking Bradley Beal is waking up 3 hours earlier on the East Coast and going, boy, I want to get there. Like, I want to be part of that. That's the only ones that could possibly
Lakers mystique,
that.
Man. Lakers exceptionalism. It knows no bounds.
8-6 in Washington, 3-10 in Los Angeles at the moment.
They wouldn't be if they had Bradley Beal. All
right. Well, if I had a pony, maybe I could enter it into Belmont. I don't know. All right, Howard, good stuff. You will be back on Friday. Do we have anyone locked in at the moment, or are you going to keep us waiting for details?
Maybe I'll just leave it as a mystery person. Then the aggregators can speculate about who's going to be on the podcast on Friday the way that they
maybe
speculated
about. Maybe it's the executive that told you that the Lakers have a shot at Bradley Beal and Rob Pelinka's.
Maybe it's Bradley Beal.
Was it Rob Pelinka speaking in the third person? Was that who gave you that information? I'm just curious. You can tell me that offline. Definitely tell me that offline.
At Kroger Pharmacy, Care is making it easy to get vaccinated. Care is helping you stay protected from flu, COVID, and RSV. Seasonal vaccines are available 7 days a week with evening hours. Care is giving you a shot at staying healthy this season. Walk in whenever is best and get multiple vaccines in one visit at your local Kroger Pharmacy. So come and get the protection you need while protecting those around you. Kroger Health, a world of care is in store. Visit Kroger.com/vaccines for more. Restrictions and exclusions apply. See site for details. When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices. Plus, extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. And up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.